You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. As always, I am broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. And I'm so happy that you have decided to join me today at republicbroadcasting.org for people who can handle the truth. Please also visit SpingolaSpeaks.net and ScreeningSandyHook.net. Visit our wonderful and mostly friendly Spingola Speaks chat room at Spingola.chatango.com. If you wish to review the names of past and future guests, just visit Spingola.com. And click on the radio schedule button on the left side of the page. We will take calls in the third hour at 800-313-9443. Our guest today is Roger Sayles. That's S-A-Y-L-E-S. His website is Sovereign 2. Wow. Thank you for the correction. Sovereign2surf.com. I guess that would have been really a bad thing. Sovereign into surf would not, that would be the very opposite of your message.
Well, it really is what's happened, but that is, I wrote a book about 10 years ago, 10 and a half.
I have that. Yes, I have that book.
And the title of it is, for the folks that may not have familiarity with me, is From Sovereign to Serf, Government by the Treachery and Deception of Words. Now, it's got my name on it. I wrote the manuscript. My two teachers, one of who's now deceased, who you had on your program several times, John Benson,
right,
re-edited that into the masterpiece it is. It started out as an 80-page manuscript, and after they waved their magic wand over it, it turned out into a masterpiece. The legal argument, the back half of that book, is a absolute masterpiece. Okay. And it's not because I wrote it. It's because they edited it. So credit where credit is due. Deanna had my teachers, both of those guys. Glenn is still alive. Lives not too far from you up there now, Deanna. In one of the Dakotas. I'm not sure which
right.
one.
Right. Yeah.
They were my teachers. And, 29 years ago this July, I crossed paths with them, and they changed my life. I considered the law teacher, John Benson, to be my second father because my original father gave me life, but John Benson gave me life number two with what he taught me and where I've been able to take it. And that's what we're here to discuss today. I've been on your show twice, I believe, since the book was written. What we're dealing with here is an unbelievably complex set of legal situations and situations, period. Okay? And what we have all been done, what's been done to all of us, let me rephrase that.
You're right.
We've been enslaved in our own minds. Okay. And what I'm here to do today is to, because I think I'm able to explain it easier than I ever have been in the 29 years I've been messing with this. Okay. And there so, and recently I wrote a 2-page paper, which is what I sent you that, solidified this appearance today. Was a 2-page bullet point overview of what's been done and how this has happened to you. Okay. And I sent it to Deanna, and I sent it out to a whole bunch of people. I'm trying to get as many of the other intermediate, you know, the next level talk show hosts, SGT Reports, X22, Dr. Dave Janda, Sarah West, all that crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody understands what's going on. And you all step, they all step right in it because of this deep, deep dive we're going to do on how this has been done to us. Okay? So what I'd like to do, Deanna, the other two times, and I think you and I talked about this briefly, I can usually tell when I'm on with somebody by the time that the show ends on whether they got it or not. Okay. I was on with Joyce Riley twice to her huge morning audience because Joyce and I had known each other for years.
Really?
And at the end of the show, both times, I could tell Joyce never got it. Okay.
Well,
this could not have been thought up by mere mortal man. They summoned their counselor, Satan, to put this one together. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with something we can all agree on and get some common ground, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's only two political statuses. You're either free or you're a slave. Is that sound right?
Yes. I think there's probably no in between.
Okay. And that's what this is. This whole thing's built on dialectics, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll show them to you all through here, all right? But let's use that first one. We're either free or we're slave, right?
Right.
Okay. You could replace the word slave with the word bond, couldn't
right.
you?
Right, right.
Is not bond the root word of bondage?
Right.
Okay. Now, let's take it another step further. We've already agreed you're either free or you're a slave. Okay?
Right.
Would you agree with this statement? Freedom is God's plan and slavery is Satan's plan.
Right.
And there ain't no other plans.
There isn't.
Okay. And this is why. It's very interesting when you get into, and I use a fancy term of the word dialectics, but the common usage term is opposites. Okay, so anytime if you don't understand the word dialectic, they're just opposites.
Mm-hmm. All right?
There's a verse in James 1:8 in the New Testament, and it says the double-minded man is uncertain in all of his ways. It
right.
doesn't say he's uncertain in part of his ways, and it doesn't say he's uncertain in some of his ways. It says he's uncertain in all of his ways. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where we are. That's where they've got us. I start the article. Deanna's going to post it on her website. I'm going to tell you how to get it straight from me. Okay, if you're listening, so have a pencil and paper ready. All right, if you're out there, because we're going to give some of that stuff out as we go forward. I'm going to follow the outline of the document pretty much, Deanna.
Okay, I have it right in front of me.
Good. At the top of the document, and the document is entitled How to Escape the Matrix, Repatriate. Okay? And you didn't know you could. Maybe some of you heard me before, maybe some of you read the book. Listen, I'm on the radio 2 hours a day on our own network, every weekday, and it's an open forum. Anybody can join and anybody can ask questions and there's no commercial interruptions. And the reason is so we can get into the explanation of these very complex things that people have been intentionally Pavlovian conditioned in your mind to an opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Plain and simple. So let's, the two statements at the top are very instructive. One is from Goethe. I believe that's how they pronounce his name. He's a German philosopher. He wrote an opera that's pretty famous named Faust. Are you familiar with that name?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what was the basis of Faust? He cut a deal
with it. Yeah, right. Faust, of course, is another name for Lucifer or Satan, the evil one, and a lot of people, I fear, have cut that same deal literally with him since, well, probably before that and since then.
Oh, yeah. Well, and there's also a term that goes along with that called a Faustian bargain.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, this is a Goethe wrote Faust. This is one of his statements. I think that he either knew what they were planning or they planned it off of this statement. Okay. And it says there are none so, catch the adjectives here. There are none so hopelessly enslaved as those who falsely believe they're free. I'm going to repeat it one more time without the emphasis. There are none so hopelessly enslaved as those who falsely believe they're free. That's where we are. That's exactly where they've got us.
Right.
Okay? The second statement is from a gal that ran an operation in our country called the Underground Railroad, and her name was Harriet Tubman.
Right.
She was black. And her statement was, and it's a very profound statement, I freed 1,000 slaves, and I could have freed thousands more if they only knew they were slaves.
Right.
And you see, that's the condition we're in. We're enslaving ourselves, and we don't understand what it is or how we've done it. And they use equivocation, this opposite meaning stuff, to absolutely enslave you. Now here I'm going to ask you a question, Deanna, and the audience, obviously. Are you a citizen of the United States, or are you a citizen of the United States of America?
Probably United States of America.
Okay, now we can go back and take our rule we agreed on. You're either free or you're slave, right? So in those two states...
In that statement,
there's an equivocation. One position is free and one slave. Citizen of the United States is under the 14th Amendment. And that political status was created after the Civil War to give blacks federal citizenship with civil rights.
Right.
The United States of America is a national citizen, and in our country, early for the first up until the 14th Amendment, really even to be a citizen of the nation, you had to be a citizen of one of the several states.
Mm-hmm.
If you were born and raised in D.C., you couldn't be a citizen of the United States of America, and before the 14th Amendment, there was no citizen of the United States.
Right.
It was a really limbo position. But I don't want to get too complex. The document is written because if I was to try and put everything in there, the document would be 200 pages. Okay.
Right.
That two-page document is hit high point, bullet point, designed to make you start asking questions. Really. There's some statements in there, and I try and show you as best I can what's been done in a simplified way to get you to realize something's wrong, kind of what's been done, and to start asking questions. All right, would you like to be free of these guys, Deanna? Everybody in the audience, would you like to shed every federal agency, including non-federal agencies like the IRS, with the exception of two sections of the code, which are constitutional, would you like to shed those from your life?
Well, I think everybody would, yes.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry to ask the, well, you know what? You're wrong. There's a lot of people that wouldn't. Okay? But your audience, yes. Okay? People that think like us, yes. A lot of the ordinary people, they want to stay in the pink cloud because that's where you get all the goodies.
Yes.
Okay? So let's go to the end game first. And then we're going to fill in the blanks. Now, this is one of the reasons I wanted to get on, Deanna, because I can explain this one heck of a lot more simplified than I ever have been able to before. I asked you to open a couple of documents before, or when we were speaking earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of them I'd like for you to drag up is an official State Department document. This is State Department policy. And I'm going to give out the address for the folks in front of a computer. You take a little time for some of you to type it in, okay? But go to the State Department website, is travel.state.gov. So if you want to follow the bouncing ball here, go to travel.state.gov. And in the search field over on the top right, I want you to type certificate of non-citizen nationality. I'm going to repeat it again. I know that's a lot. Certificate of those are two words, non-citizen nationality. Okay? So, I'll wait a second, let it get to you. What you're going to see is a list of options. Just pick number one. They're all the same document.
Mm-hmm. A valid U.S. passport.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I'll give everybody, okay. Let me repeat that again. Go to travel.state.gov. I want you to see this with your own eyes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to have Deanna read it. All right. So, travel.state.gov in the search field. Certificate of non-citizen nationality. Options will pop up. Pick number one. Okay. Now, if you're there, I'm going to tell you what this is before we get into it, because I'm going to show you the most honest and truthful statement you're ever going to hear out of these crooks that run the federal government. Okay. And the only reason they're telling you is because they got to set up the lie that follows. Okay, so the Certificate of Non-Citizen Nationality is basically a State Department document going over the fact that there's this group of political status. Now, they formed a new political status when they did this and hid one of the previous ones behind it. That's what's going on. American Samoa. You ever had any interest in American Samoa before, Deanna?
No.
Do you know anything about them?
I have met people from Samoa.
No, not Samoa. No, not Samoa. American Samoa. They're different.
Okay.
Samoa is a pretty good size island, and just off to the east of it is a little bitty island that looks like an almond. And it's pretty small compared to Samoa, and that is American Samoa. It was taken over and brought into our system of government back in 1900, and it remains to this day the only territory in the entire system that's unincorporated to this day. Okay. Now, these are the folks that did this. We know how benevolent, kind, and caring they are, don't we?
Sure.
Well, they saw the American Samoan culture as such a unique culture that they wanted to preserve it, like they've preserved all the other unique cultures out through history, right?
Sure.
And I've learned one thing in all my years. Anytime you see an exception like the one I just laid out to you, go look at it. Okay? And the exception I gave you was that American Samoa is the only unincorporated territory in the entire federal system.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, so every other territory, we are actually corporations. This country is a corporation. It is not a country.
Yeah, it's well, that's not that. And there's a lot of stuff going around about 1871, and I'm going to show you the fallacy in that, too, as we go forward. But let's not get the cart ahead of the horses, okay?
Okay.
You know, there's an old saying in the profession I was in, it's easier to pull a rope than it is to push a rope. And I'm trying to pull the rope here, okay? So this Certificate of Non-Citizen Nationality was put out by the State Department for these American Samoans. And if you read to the bottom, which you don't need to, but you can, if you read to the bottom, they're going to say, well, we used to issue these things called Certificates of Non-Citizen Nationality. We have requests for them occasionally. But you know, Deanna, the cost of paper and the ink, because it's on real fancy paper, mm-hmm. The cost of the paper and the ink is so high, we just don't do it anymore. And we advise you apply for a passport, okay? Now, when an American Samoan applies for a passport, something very interesting happens. And this document spells it out for you. Is they get a passport just like you'd get.
Mm-hmm.
But inside there's a big stamp, you know, in the visa part.
Mm-hmm.
Where they stamp your countries and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big stamp in there that says, this person's not a citizen of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because they have a classification, non-citizen national. They're a national, but they can't be a citizen of the United States unless they naturalize. They can come to the U.S. and naturalize and take on the citizen of the United States status. But born and in their country, they can't be one. And it gives American Samoans a glass ceiling. Like, if they come to the U.S., they can serve in the military, but they can't be in the officer's ranks. They have a representative in Congress, but the representative can't vote. There are limitations like that.
Right.
And so, with all that as a background of what we're going to read, I'm going to have Deanna read to you. I want you to go down. Are we about? Is that music for a break?
Yes, that is time for a break.
All right.
I got to make sure I'm on the right page too before.
Okay. Well, let's just stay right here because I want to keep people's congruity to the next segment.
Okay.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony.
All right, we are back with our guest. And our guest is Roger Sayles, S-A-Y-L-E-S. His website is sovereigntosurf.com. Okay, let's pick up where we left off.
Let's just pick up a little transition. We're on the State Department website. We're looking at an official State Department policy document. It's called Certificate of Non-Citizen Nationality, and it's mainly written for American Samoans because they're the only ones that are non-citizen nationals. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now then, I want you to go down to the third paragraph, Deanna. Not too far down the page. And I'd like for you to read me the first, you and me and the audience, the first 10 words.
As defined by the INA, all U.S. citizens are U.S. nationals.
Okay, you can stop right there. Now, the rest of the document is the lie to tell you about why the American Samoans are non-citizen nationals and can't be birthright citizens. But that statement right there, those first 10 words, I'm going to repeat it again. It's the most honest statement you're ever going to hear out of these Babylonian horse thieves. And the only reason they put it in there is because they had to set up the lie. Okay, so now my question to you is this. Did you know you had a dual political status?
Possibly. I am a citizen of Illinois and also a citizen of the United States of America, or perhaps a citizen of the United States. So
okay, well, let's get back to our first thing we agreed on. You're either free or you're slave, right?
Right.
It doesn't matter what they label it. And that's how one of the ways they've used to confuse it is they change the label like they do everything else. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't change the underlying fact and the underlying concept. Now let me go back and let's explain something on those 10 words you just read, and I'm going to reread them. According to the Immigration and Naturalization Act, all U.S. citizens are U.S. nationals. All. A-L-L.
All right.
Is that pretty inclusive or am I missing something?
That's inclusive. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now then. I'm going to ask you two questions that you've been asked your entire lifetime, and I'd like for you to answer them like you've answered them every time. And I'm sure everybody in the audience is going to have the same answers, unless there's some rare exceptions. Okay? Deanna, on some kind of a loan form, or maybe when you're going to the bank and requesting a credit card or something,
mm-hmm.
This is one of the questions. Are you a citizen of the United States?
We all say yes.
How have you answered that? You've
well,
answered it, yes.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Are you a resident?
Yes.
Okay. Now let's rephrase those questions, not the way they've been tricked to ask you that way and conditioned your mind to answer yes, but let me ask you the two questions how they're really legally what they're asking you, okay? Are you a citizen of the United States? Legally, they're asking you, are you related to black slaves who, after the Civil War, received federal citizenship, civil rights?
Yes.
Okay, would you answer that question yes again?
No.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask you the second one. Do you have the status of black slave, citizen of the United States, and are living in a state asking for federal protection against the abuses of your state?
Oh, no, gosh.
Well, you mean you would have answered them totally 100% opposite had you known what they were asking?
Right.
Okay. Have you ever heard of anybody say that they've got to have the consent of the governed?
Yes.
Guess who gave them their consent? You did.
Yes.
Anybody that's ever answered that question
gave
them the consent that they are exercising now. Is this a little clearer than the last time we covered this?
Yes, yes. I should have had you on the program in intervening years. I have no idea why I haven't.
Well, it's because it wasn't meant to be, and it's meant to be now. Okay? Now, one of the reasons that I was stimulated to write that document, and by the way, I've spent 20 hours on two pages. 20 hours. To get it down as concise and abbreviated and accentuated as it is. One of the reasons I did that is because I've been doing this for almost 30 years, Deanna, in one way, shape, or form or another. For the first, 20 or almost over 15, I can only explain it one way, from the tax side, and I would have to have your attention to give you all of these legal concepts and history that you'd never been aware of before to get you to a point where I could show you in the tax code what they're doing to you. Okay? And there's not very many people that are going to sit through that, unfortunately. So what I noticed was there's always the truth seekers that would come. But occasionally we get some new people. Like we're going to get after the break.
Right. All righty, we'll be right back.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All righty, we are back. Our guest today is Roger Sayles, S-A-Y-L-E-S. His website is sovereigntosurf.com, and we are looking at a very interesting page that I will post in the chat room. And thank you for the person who previously posted the page. Okay. Let's pick up where we left off.
Deanna, the link to all this, and it's covered in the document, How to Escape the Matrix. So this is in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I've learned that it's so complex, I don't want to lead you into the complexities so that you're totally confused when I give you the punchline. So I'm giving you the punchline, the end game at the start, and we're going to fill in the blanks, but you're going to know where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, you just had a gun spot on there for those folks out in Nevada. I can't remember the name of them there. How any of you gun owners would you like it if none of the regulations in Title 27 and BATF applied to you anymore? Do you think that might interest some of your listeners?
All right.
Okay.
I love that commercial because at the end John says, "Shoot him an email." And I don't think he did it on purpose, but I always laugh when I hear it because it's so
nice double on the contract. And that is, you know what that's called right there? I'm going to tell you, this is there's a word for what they've done here. And a listener called in one day and gave it to me. I didn't even know it. It's called equivocation. And you can go to your dictionary and look it up, and you can even go, really, when I learned it, I went back to the 1828 Webster's Dictionary to look it up. And it tells you what it is, where you got two conflicting definitions of words. And then down at the bottom, there's a little note on the one I looked at that day. And it said, this technique is often used by non-Christians to fool Christians. Okay. Now then, we've talked about our certificate here. Let me get this irritating thing down. And I want to take you to the end game, how to get out of it. Okay. Scroll down a little bit on this document, and I'm going to show you the proof of what I'm talking about. They're going to show you, actually. Go down, they do some definitions and some stuff on sections of the INA below that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see where it says section 101A21? It's the second one, I think.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it says, why don't you read it?
The term national, excuse me, means a person owing permanent allegiance to a state.
Well, I'm going to correct you. I'm going to reread it. The term national means a person owing permanent allegiance to a small s state.
Oh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now then, I'd like for you to go down two, I think. Okay. And section 101A36 of the Immigration and Naturalization Act. You see that right below that?
I see the term state capitalized.
Yes. Oh, it's, you think that, well, do you think it makes a difference whether it's small case or capitalized?
I believe it would, yes.
Okay. Well, then read the rest of the definition. A capital S state is?
The term state includes the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Virgin Islands of the United States.
Well, in the above one, they didn't list out any includes, did they? They just put small s state. Okay, now let me tell you what they're doing here. The base formula of the term we use that's so incredibly important here is called jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. How do they have the power to make man-made laws and apply them to me? That's jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the basic formula goes back to something we're going to discuss here in a minute. It's the system we're in. And I want to ask you, I'll ask you right now, Deanna, can you tell us how much you know about the feudal system?
Probably not sufficient to.
You probably don't know too much about it, do you?
No.
Okay, well, we're going to go into it a little bit, because that's the system we're in.
Perhaps under a different name, I might recognize it, but go ahead.
Well, let's go back to what we're doing here. We're going to cover that in a minute. A term national, notice it doesn't say U.S. national. A term national means a person owing permanent allegiance to a small s state. The concept of jurisdiction came out of the feudal system. And it was the relationship of a liege man to a liege lord. That's their terminology. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Liege being the root word of allegiance.
Mm-hmm.
And the formula is allegiance for protection, protection for allegiance. We use it today offhandedly in our movement as if you receive the benefit, you owe the duty. Okay? But this is the base and where it came from. So when they say permanent allegiance to a small s state, they're telling you that's the old state citizen. But unless you know that other legal stuff, you don't understand what they're telling you. Okay, now I want you to go down. I told you this is easy to get out of. We're hitting high points today here, folks. Okay? I told you this is easy to get out of, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want you to scroll down to the very bottom of this page and read the last three lines starting over on the right under the quote. Oh. You see that?
The last paragraph?
Yes, the very last paragraph on the page. Don't mess with the paragraph because that's a bunch of smoke. Read the last sentence on that page.
I, being duly sworn, hereby declare my intention to be a national. Oh, but not a citizen of the United States.
That's how difficult it is to get out of this. That statement, put in preferably affidavit form. Why? Because now it's weaponized. An affidavit is the highest form of truth in law if it's properly formed, properly notarized, and presented to proper authority. They then have to write their own affidavit trumping what your statement and facts are, and they've got to sign it under penalty of perjury too, and they'll never do it. Okay, now, can you believe that that sentence can get you or anybody else out of all this crap? It's hard to believe.
Specifically, tell us what this crap, quote.
Okay, now we can
is.
Go back. Let's go back to the document now. I've laid the end. I've showed you how to get out. You know, I've done a lot of public speaking in my life, and I was a teacher for 10 years, and I heard a guy, a very accomplished speaker one time, say, a good talk is you go in, you tell them what you're going to tell them.
Right.
You tell them, and then you
then
tell
you
them what,
yes,
you told, what you tell
told
them.
What you told them.
Okay? That's what I'm trying to do here.
Yes.
All right. So now we're going to go over and go down this document, How to Escape the Matrix, that Deanna's going to post on her website. And if you'd like a copy of this, I don't have it posted on my website yet, but here's what you can do. This is why I told you to get the pencil and paper. You can write me an email at this address, and it's on the bottom of the document, too, if you download it. Anybody want all where we are, all the contact stuff is on that. But if you're listening and you're just being exposed to this, I want you to have a copy of this. And I think you might want to have a copy of it. And it's designed so you can send it to all your friends electronically. You can post it anywhere. You might be able to post stuff. Or for the real grassroots rubber meets the road, you can take it to a printer and print it off easily and go hand it to people on the street. You can take it into businesses that you know that are positive towards our message. Have them print it up and hand it out to every customer that comes in the store. This is how we spread it, because this is how we beat these guys. They didn't come in and conquer us with guns. They used their intellect and this trick right here to conquer us and control us. We're not going to get out of it by fighting them with guns. We're going to get out of it by fighting it with our brains and our intellect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
So, if you want a copy of this document, and I would encourage every one of you to please follow through on this. If you don't have a copy, send an email to Radio Ranch, that's one word, Radio Ranch at mail@mail.com. Repeat it again. Radio Ranch, all one word, at mail@mail.com. Just send me an email. You can just put Matrix Doc up in the subject line. I'll shoot it right back to you. Okay. So let's go over now the document. Deanna, we went over the two statements at the top, the two quotes, right? And then I tell you that this is meant to make you start asking questions. And the first place we start is where it started. Well, let me digress just one step before we get here. You know where this started, Deanna?
Oh, no.
I'm going to ask you to see how good your recall is here. When was the first time you were exposed to Alice in Wonderland?
Oh, goodness. You don't want the year, do you?
Oh, no, I'm just off the cuff. You remember 6, 7, 5?
Okay, Alice in Wonderland. I was quite the reader, so I would say probably when I was 5.
Okay, would you say that a 5-year-old's mind is pretty impressionable in your full subconscious?
Oh, absolutely. A child is so, they're just waiting
for.
This is where
they start.
Yes.
This is where they start. You know it's a political document, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And what was the original working title of Alice in Wonderland? Do you remember?
Alice in Wonderland. What did they call it?
Through the looking glass.
I'll
save you a little time. And you can prove this right now before I get into the quotes. I'm going to quote you out of Alice that influenced you even though you didn't know it, because we're talking subconscious here. You know, your subconscious controls 90% of your day. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you go and have you seen an article on the Rothschilds costume ball?
No.
Okay. Put in a search engine, Lady Rothschild's costume ball. You don't have to do it right now. You can do it later. But there's a lot. You'll see a bunch of articles. It was back in the 80s or something, and Lady Rothschild had a big costume ball. And in several of the articles, it'll say in the first paragraph, Lady Rothschild was so clever. She had the invitations printed backwards, so you had to read them in a mirror.
Oh my gosh.
Huh? Does that kind of tweak anything for you? Okay. Now, here we go. At the first of the book, the film, whatever, I went back and watched the Disney on this, by the way, a while back. So, at the first of the film, you know, Alice is there with her teacher in a nice little patch of grass, and her teacher, instructor, whatever it is teaching her whatever subject, and she goes off in a daydream. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And she ends up, in the story, she ends up on the tree adjacent to where she was being taught on a big limb there towards the bottom, and her cat's with her, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And she says this, if I had a world of my own, everything would be what it is, because everything would be what it isn't.
Right.
And then what it is, it wouldn't be. You see?
Mm-hmm.
Does that ring a bell with anybody? Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, this is why you get a little further into there, and there's this wonderful quote that was on the very front page of my legal research book from Nolo Press. It's where I found it. Humpty Dumpty said, in a rather scornful tone, when I use a word, it means exactly what I say it means, no more, no less.
Yes.
The question is, said Alice, how can you make a word mean so many different things?
Mm-hmm.
The question is, said Humpty Dumpty, who's to be master? That's all.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they started you whenever you first got exposed to Alice in Wonderland, which is, I remind you, the world's most popular children's story.
Oh my gosh, they started us out very young, didn't they?
I'm telling you, man, these people are slicker than bus station chili. Okay?
Yes.
All right, so let's go over here to the document and the setup. This is what I want y'all to understand. I should close this thing out, period. Okay, I'll do that. And I won't be interrupted, Deanna. Right under that, we go to the 13th Amendment. The 13th Amendment was passed after the Civil War. It's got some very interesting aspects to it. First of all, it's not the original 13th Amendment. Do you know that?
No. Oh, of course, yes. I've written about it.
Okay. And the 13th Amendment made it for lawyers couldn't serve in Congress anymore.
Right.
You know they had to get rid of that.
Right.
Now, we found it in old law books, by the way, so it was ratified. It was in the Constitution in old law books. They don't put unratified amendments in law books.
Right.
Okay. So let's go to the new 13th that they ran in, and it's instructive to note that this was voted on in June of that year, and they actually allowed the Southern legislators into Congress to vote on this one. But 6 months later with the 14th, they wouldn't let them in. Okay. Now, let's read the 13th Amendment. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for a crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Okay? Two important points. We know what's outlawed, slavery and involuntary servitude. Well, voluntary servitude is legal by omission then, because it's not specifically outlawed. Is that right?
Right.
And it's their jurisdictions denoting the several states. It's not singular. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so those are two pretty important points. Never heard anybody else expand on this. No lawyers, no court cases, no nothing. Okay? Now, 6 months later, they passed the 14th Amendment. It reads, this is the first clause, the 14th Amendment's long. Everything we do is on the first clause of the 14th Amendment. All persons born or naturalized in the United States, comma, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, comma, are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There's 8 legal landmines in that sentence. Legal landmines. All right? I won't go over them here. This is for more in-depth, dig deep down. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're surface here today. We want you to start asking questions. Okay? So, now let's read it again with one word. Rather than go over those 8, let's just mess with one. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The 14th Amendment does not say all persons born or naturalized in the United States, comma, are subject to the jurisdiction thereof. It says and. Any difference in that, you think?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, Deanna, you've been kicking around here for a long time. You know, our movement, you've been on the air for a long time, you know.
Yeah, 10 and a half years.
You remember Al Addisk?
Yes.
Okay. And for those who don't know, Al doesn't have too high a profile last few years. Al Addisk, legal oriented guy in Texas, got into this. He was a roofer. Did you know that? He's a roofer, and he got into a family custody fight, divorce, and that got him into this. We all come in through different doors. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But my point earlier I didn't get to make was, that's the way new people came, is when their ox got gored. So whether it's IRS or whatever, and then they start asking questions. Well, a couple of weeks ago, everybody's ox got gored simultaneously and collectively at the same time. That's why I wrote this paper, because I know there's a lot more people that are receptive to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the 14th Amendment does not say you are subject to. It says and. That denotes a choice, doesn't it? If there's some that are and subject, are there some not that are and not subject?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, there you go. That's the whole thing right there. It doesn't say they are subject. It says they're and subject.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to tell you a little, I'm going to lift the curtain up just a little bit, and maybe we can go into what I wanted to go into a minute ago. The first 3 words, all persons born, you notice how they're underlined there in the document? Those 3 words run the world. All persons born. They run the world this day and have for a long time. And I'm going to explain to you how. I mentioned a minute ago the feudal system. Most people don't know anything about it. Okay? The feudal system developed in Europe after Rome fell. As Rome was falling. And here's what happened. Rome was stretched to the east all the way to Spain, and I mean to the east all the way through Constantinople, and to the west all the way through Spain. Well, it was the Western Empire that fell first, okay, and fell, period. And what happened was the Goths came down, the Germans came down, started fighting them, and all the spread of that Western territory, they had major towns, okay, Valencia, etc.
Right.
Ah, there we go. A hint, sense of break. Fall of the Roman Empire, where we'll pick it up.
We will be right back. Alrighty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Roger Sales. And I was kind of multitasking, going through the document as you were talking. I have it on my website and am in the process of uploading it I have it all nicely formatted, and it's ready to go. And I'm just finishing up, putting it up.
Well, we're going to go back to where kind of this started, okay? And we were at the, before the break, we were at the fall of the Roman Empire.
Right.
By the way, Edward Gibbons wrote that great book, The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire.
I have that book. Mm-hmm.
And there's a statement he makes in there that I think you'll find particularly interesting. He said, the first engine of tyranny is a corrupt judiciary.
Right.
Okay. So let's go back to the downfall of Rome and this situation where the cities in the empire were being attacked and the roads that connected them were cut off. Therefore, the Goths could surround the cities and force them to do whatever they want to siege, right? Well, people would get out, all right? And all they could do is run out in the countryside. Most of the land was owned by Roman generals. And they would go to the landowner and say, can you please give us some shelter? And he'd go, yeah, I can, but you got to promise me that you'll help me defend me against these guys if they come for me. There's your allegiance for protection, protection for allegiance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, that developed, and it has 1,000 years of legal precedent. This isn't no shot in the dark, here one day, gone the next. Mm-hmm. 1,000 years of legal precedent here. That's 4 times longer than our country's been in existence.
Mm-hmm.
Perspective, okay? So it developed.
All righty. Okay. We are at the top of the hour. We'll be right back, and I'll have the document uploaded to the website when we get back. Be right back.
Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth. Truth.
Guest is Roger Sales. The website is sovereigntosurf.com. I have uploaded the document. I went through and I corrected the punctuation here and there.
Okay.
I didn't change it. I just formatted it so that it flowed better.
Not my specialty. Punctuation and grammar are not my specialties.
I take pride in doing that. So
okay.
It's up, and I just posted it in the chat room.
Okay. Well, anyway, we were talking about the system that you've been born and lived in all your life and didn't know anything about. You think you're over there in another system under a constitutional document with its protections, and you ain't nothing but a feudal serf. Okay? And you don't have access to that document, even though they make it appear that you do.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
To pull off the scam. So let's go back to Rome and the feudal system, and this is what developed over 1,000 years. It was a recognized system in Europe. In fact, I'll show you, let me just give you a little peek under the cover here. In 1066, William the Conqueror came over by just a quirk of one arrow. If you don't know that story, it's incredible. Took over England and brought with him from Normandy in France the European common law, which included the feudal system, which had never been in England before. Up to that point, we had the Anglo-Saxon common law. After that, we have the English common law that includes feudalism. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Very important to understand. So, as the system developed over the years, there were two types of villains. Now, I'd encourage you to go to one of the law dictionaries and look. When you look at this stuff yourself, it's your information. When I'm telling you on the radio, it's a guy on the radio telling me something. Mm-hmm. Okay? So I call that making the information yours. All right? Because mm-hmm. you've looked at it and seen it. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to Black's Law Dictionary, it's spelled, it has an unusual spelling because it's French in origin, but we say it villain. It's spelled V-I-L-L-E-I-N and pronounced in that spelling, villain. Okay?
Right, that's different.
Now the males,
yes.
the males were called villains and the females were called knaves. All right?
Yes.
And there were two types of villains in the feudal system. There was one that it was involuntary, that was like akin to the same condition as black slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And once you were in a involuntary position, there was only one way you could ever get out. And that's if you were a bastard. Because if you were a bastard, there was always a suspicion that you were sired by the lord of the manor. And that would get you out. It's the only way you could get out.
No, okay? I know a lot. I've known a lot of those in my lifetime.
Okay. So the other The other one was called a voluntary serf, because unlike the involuntary serf condition, a voluntary serf could volunteer in and out of the position at any time. Okay? Now, you can see the way they did this. You can go look it up. It's called an oath of fealty. Have you ever heard of that, Deanna? An oath of fealty.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And there's, if you want to see one, go to Monty Python's Holy Grail, and he's got one in that movie. Okay? Now, this was an oath of fealty, and it's a contract. Let's say, you know, the times are hard down in jolly old London, and you got a family to feed, and you want to go get a land where you can grow some vegetables and work and feed your family. That's the condition. So you go to the big manor, and you go to the Lord, and you go, hey, I want to volunteer into servitude. I need to feed my family.
Right.
And he goes, okay. And so what they did was they would pull all the villains, the serfs, called serfs, because you're in servitude, all right. All the serfs would surround you and the lord of the manor, and you would have this ceremony called an oath of fealty.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that the ceremony was set and progressed is you would kneel on your knees and put your hands like you were praying above your head.
Wow.
The lord of the manor would put his hands over your hands, and you would give him an oath swearing all your body and all your worldly goods to the lord of the manor under this relationship, protection for allegiance, allegiance for protection. I'll give you protection and a plot of land when you grow your vegetables. By the way, I get 25%.
Wow.
Okay. But the rest of them is yours, all right? And should the adjacent feudal lord come and try and take our feud, you're going to come to the castle and help fight him. See the arrangement?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, there were some very interesting... That's a contract. There are witnesses, and you swore your body and your worldly goods. You came into that relationship voluntarily
right.
and told him you were his property.
Right.
Now, property is an interesting word. We have two definitions here. You see, this is how they're getting us overall on a big picture, Deanna,
mm-hmm.
is they get us conditioned to these words in a colloquial usage, and they use them against us in a highly technical legal usage, and they're flying 50,000 feet above us and laughing their fannies off at us.
Right.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. You were telling me when we spoke earlier that you had your driveway shoveled, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to take it for granted that you've got a car.
I do.
Okay, is that car your property?
I thought it was, but...
Do you own it? It doesn't have any car payments, right? You own it.
I own it.
But I have
to pay a license every
yes,
year.
You think you own it, okay.
Right.
Now, legally, that's not correct. Colloquially, the way we use it, yeah. Okay, that's how we all understand it. Legally, property is a right in and to a thing. And the car is the thing, and the property is your right of ownership in and to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, big difference, all right?
Same for my house. I think I own it.
Same for you don't own anything, baby. You can't own anything because you are property.
Right.
Until you give them that sentence or some other form to rebut the presumption that you are, you remain property. That's why you're using paper money, because you can't pay debts. Free people can own things, and they pay debts with hard money, gold, silver, whatever, right? And then they've got the property because they own the ownership right. In our society, we have to use paper money that's debt money to discharge our debts, because your property, and property can't own property.
Wow.
Are you starting to get it?
Yes.
Okay. So
how
the
disturbing.
System,
I knew bits and parts of this, that the minute you miss paying your taxes on your house, they can come in and take it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you don't own it.
Right.
You don't have a loyal title to your land. You can get it. You can get
right.
it each day. Okay, but that's another story. Let's continue down our feudal
right.
explanation here. So the feud, the guy was now, by the way, if you go to the Black's Law Dictionary, there's several different types of villains. They'll give you an overall, and then they go into some categories. I think about the first one down on Black's is called a villain in gross. There's another one called a villain regardant, and different aspects of that contract. Okay,
mm-hmm.
But if you look at villain in gross in Black's, it says a villain attached to the land property and transferable by deed. How about we rephrase it? A citizen of the United States subject to the jurisdiction thereof as property and transferable by their birth certificate.
Right, right. And Social Security number is associated.
No.
That.
Social Security number has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Okay. The birth certificate does. All right. Now I'm going to go back to the feudal system and show you why. In that system, you volunteered into being property, right? So if you and the wife got a little amorous one night and you produced a new serf, what condition was that serf born into?
Servitude.
Same exact condition.
Right.
Because his parents were property in that condition, and if they had a child, that child was born into the same condition, right?
Right.
And but so he could volunteer out even if his great-great-great-grandfather was the one that volunteered into servitude, and five generations later he decided he wanted to leave, he was out.
Wow.
Okay? Now you gotta do it a specific way. You don't go to the other serfs and go, hey, listen, when you see the Lord and he comes around, tell him I'm out of here.
Yeah, right.
it didn't work that way. Okay? You had to go to the Lord. Why? Because he's the one you made the contract with.
Sure.
And say, hey man, I'm out of here. And he goes, all right, well, come back to see us if you get a chance. Now, there's one consideration. If you had, and I don't want to get too complex, but there are some exceptions to some of these things. The exception here was if you went to volunteer out of servitude and he had given you 10 silver shillings when you came in, you had to give him the 10 silver shillings back. That's called consideration contract.
Okay.
Okay. But that's the feudal system. It has a thousand years of legal precedent, and that's the system you were born into. Now let me take it back. When I said those first three words, all persons born run the world, because that's where the presumption is. Okay? So now you're presumed, and I can explain, because we've had one of our guys research it at the hospital level. I got the whole scam. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But all persons born, the presumption of law is a presumption of law based on another fact. This is how they're doing it, twice removed. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The presumption is at birth, since everybody was put into this condition on March the 9th of 1933 with the bankruptcy.
Right. Yes.
That's when the system changed. How do we know the system changed that day? Because they took the gold and they issued the new fiat paper and made an outlawed gold. Why would they outlaw gold? Because everybody is in servitude in this new position. You're property of the federal government. You can't own property. Therefore, you can't pay debts with real money. You can only discharge them.
Wow.
I told you it was complex, and that's why nobody's ever figured it out. And if I wouldn't have had John Benson as my teacher, I'd have never figured it out either.
Mm-hmm. Well, the way that you're explaining it, which is beautiful, and if any of my listeners recognize these things that have happened with the FDR situation in 1933, with several, and I thought about the Irish and how Britain went in and just stole all their food in 1845 through 48,
49. Yeah, but you're foretelling the future. You're foretelling the U.S.'s future right now.
Yes.
You read the tea leaves, girl.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So anyway, that's the system you're in, and I invite people to go back and familiarize yourself with it, because I guarantee you, if you ask most of the listeners here, what do you know about the feudal system, they'd go blank for a minute and say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And yet it's the system you've been born into and that you've agreed to, because you've been the one giving them your consent when they ask you the loaded questions.
Right.
Okay. So let me give you what happens. This is where the fraud happens. I've got a very good student. He's been with me about 8 years. He was a four-year scholarship football player at the University of Texas. He's fearless. Okay? He stumbled on me on Joyce and automatically just started confronting the system. He filed his affidavit first, and you can file it with or without a passport application. I advise you to do it with a passport application if you can afford it, and we're going to go over that before we end today, okay?
Okay.
And because now your new status is linked to your new passport.
Ah!
Okay, so now you got the highest form of government ID, and it correctly identifies you, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look any different. There's not going to be any nomenclature on there that you'd recognize that identifies it. You got to keep in mind, look at the depths we're talking about that they've gone to set this up and hide this that we're exposing today. Okay? So why did they do that? Well, for one thing, because they didn't want anybody to figure it out. And two, because it's so damned easy to get out of. And they know it. We don't, or didn't.
Mm-hmm.
We do now. Okay. So let's see, where was I going to go here? Well, we might as well. We do cover, were there any questions on the feudal system that you had, Deanna?
No.
Okay, well then let's go back to what I was saying, all persons born, and I'm going to take you to the hospital fraud, okay? All persons born, the first three words of the 14th Amendment, were intended to rule the world when they caused the Civil War to get these amendments in, and they do run the world 100 years later.
Right.
Okay. Now, why are those three words so critically important? Because the feudal system is the only system, legal system in the history of the world where your political status was assigned at your birth. Otherwise, you follow your parents' hereditament, their bloodlines. There's two different types of determining status. This is one, that's the other. That's why some of your, let me clear my throat here, I'm going to mute for just a second. That's why if your grandparents or great-grandparents were Polish, Italian, Spanish, some of the other countries over there in Europe, that you can go back and get one of those passports. Because those countries are on that blood system.
Mm.
Okay? So there's your two different types. The only place of any legal system assigns political status at birth is the feudal system. So those three words, if you know that, and it says all persons born, well hell, that's the feudal system. Because that's the only place
right.
that political status was assigned at birth. Okay? Now let's go into how they're doing it. My student named Brian, he's on with us all the time on my show, by the way. We'll plug my show. I'll tell you about it before we end. And, Brian, he's just fearless. He'll do a lot of stuff I wouldn't do back in the old days, okay? He just gets right in their face. Now he's really empowered, because that's what this information does. It re-empowers you with all the power that God meant you to have that was stolen at your birth. Okay? And so it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight, but you're going to get to a point if you delve into the information, you make it yours. And what happens, Deanna, is this. You start to change the way you think. And you can't change the way you think without the way manifesting the way you act. Okay.
Now, what kind of jeopardy do you place yourself in? You
absolutely, absolutely none. I would say this. When they don't recognize this, we all know what time it is.
But I'm talking about your personal...
Oh, personally for me?
Mm-hmm.
There's two sticky wickets here that people have come up consistently. One's IRS. We've got that handled. The other's a driver's license, because you got to tell them you're a resident.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the term that ties you back into the 14th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
The state in which they reside.
Mm-hmm.
So when you answer that question, are you a resident? You think it means I live over there. See my house? Isn't I just painted? Mm-hmm. It ain't pretty, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that ain't what they're asking you. That is a highly technical legal term from a body of law called ambassadorial law, where countries go into treaties and exchange ambassadors. Okay, let's say you're in I'm in Ecuador. Let's say the Ecuadorian ambassador gets caught out there at what's the big airport in D.C.? Whichever one.
No,
you're flying into D.C. I forgot. You're flying into D.C. and he gets caught with a kilo of cocaine in his diplomatic pouch.
Right.
What do they do?
Oh well, they let him off.
No, they send him back to Ecuador because he's in residency, and that means the laws of Ecuador apply to him, not the laws of the United States. So when you tell them you're a resident of a state, you're telling them that the 14th Amendment and federal law apply.
Okay.
You're residing in a state asking protection from the federal government against your state, like the blacks were in certain states after the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's a highly technical term. It doesn't mean where you live. It means what legal system are you under. You can prove this. Go to Webster's Collegiate Dictionary and look under the word resident. You're going to see two definitions. They're almost the exact same thing. The first one says the act or fact of living or dwelling in a place for some time.
Mm-hmm.
The second one says the act or fact of living or dwelling in a place for some time for the receipt of a benefit or the discharge of a duty. That's legal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to get back to Brian, and Brian goes into the hospital. He's got two daughters. I'm sure they're lovely. They're, I don't know, 8, 9 years old, something in that range.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes in with his daughters in tow, no less, in flip-flops and shorts. And he goes up to the administrative office, and he said, listen, I'm building a folder for my daughters here that were born at this hospital in case they ever need it in later life and all in any important documents and stuff. And so he starts quizzing the lady. Well, she finally goes off, and she brings back a piece of paper called a verification of facts. And that's what's produced when the baby is born. Immediately after the child is born, they have this document called a verification of facts. And it's got the height, the weight, the ear color, eye color, maybe footprints, handprints, whatever. It's got all that on it. And then down at the bottom, there's a place for the mother and the father to sign.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what's never signed? The verification of facts. When that document's produced, and we got this, he finally bugged the lady on the third floor so much that she said, listen, I'm going to send you down to where this happened. So he goes down the basement.
Mm-hmm.
The lady comes up, and he says, this is what I'm looking for. And she goes off. She said, okay, wait a second. And she goes off for about 10 minutes. And she comes back, and the very first words out of her mouth are, you're not going to use anything I tell you against us, are you?
Oh, my gosh.
No, heavens, I'd never do anything like that. I'm just building this folder for my daughters in case they need it in later life. That's the first thing she said. Okay, here's the process that he has investigated and got all of the proof. This is what happens. The verification of facts representing the child without the parent's signature on it is taken over to a computer. Oh, just hold on. Strap yourself in, kid.
Mm-hmm.
Is taken over to a computer terminal that's installed in every hospital in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, all it has is capital letters, evidently. And they type in all the vital statistics in a real old DOS type program. It's nothing fancy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's finished, that information is transferred to the Bureau of Vital Statistics.
Right.
And the Bureau of Vital Statistics prints the birth certificate. Are you ready for this, Deanna? And then they put it in a bank safe that's guarded by armed guards 24 hours a day, 7 days.
Oh my gosh.
Why would that be?
Because you're a value to the state for
your future labor.
Right. Right.
Is being securitized and collateralized.
Right.
The birth certificate acts, again, in this equivocation thing.
Mm-hmm.
Your birth certificate forms two functions. One, it identifies all the birth information.
Mm-hmm.
Two, you notice it always goes to the Department of Commerce?
Wow, yes, yes.
And now you're securitized and collateralized.
Right.
What John always speculated, and I've come to the conclusion many years ago he's correct, is that is a specific type of a commercial document, because we're in commercial law under the UCC.
Right.
Okay. And that is a specific commercial document that is called a warehouse receipt. You can go look it up in a search engine and read about it. Okay. The birth certificate doubles and is being used in that other capacity as a warehouse receipt. Now, warehouse receipts have very interesting qualities legally. One is that the good that the receipt represents, the good now takes on a shadowy existence and becomes the paper. Are you getting me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why it's put into a safe with armed guards.
Right.
Because if you have the paper, you've got constructive possession of the good.
Right. And why has no one brought this forward? Why? I presume that these people that are in these positions of controlling this collateral and the paperwork and everything, they do it because they get paid to do it.
I've lost the trail right there. I can't tell you any more than that on the specifics of how it's done or whatever else, but I'll take you to that point. Maybe if we ever can take over and we can get in the bowels of the Treasury Department, we can find out.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I'm going to go back to something I said earlier. I'm going to show you how they use this. They then attach you through this mechanism. What did the definition say? Transferable by deed?
Mm-hmm.
Would a warehouse receipt qualify as a deed?
Yes.
If they've got possession, if the paper's the good, then the whoever owns the paper can transfer it, and that fulfills that definition of a villain in gross, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now they take your birth certificate, implying your future labor, because your property now, your parents didn't sign the verification of facts. In fact, your parents had admitted all their life that they were serfs too. So when they have a child, the automatic logical conclusion is that's a serf too. That's why they don't sign the paper. And in a silent contract in the, from the feudal system, the oath of fealty that runs silent generationally. Can you see why our enemies like this little system?
Sure.
Okay. So now they take your birth certificate over and they attach it to an instrument called the United States Bond. And they sell them on the open market. 6 month, 1 year, 5 year, 10 year, 30 year, they're talking about 50 and 100 year now. And some foreigner gives them that money and buys that bond, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how does the bondholder get paid? Through your income tax.
Ah!
Okay, now I'm going to mention a phrase to you here, Deanna. And I've heard everybody from Ron Paul to economists to people I really respect say it. and they don't know what they're talking about. They make money out of thin air.
Oh, they don't. They make money by sell. We're in bondage.
They've securitized your future labor to pay bondholders. That's
right.
When the Federal Reserve goes into a Federal Open Market Committee and comes out and say, we need $1 billion circulating in the economy. They call the Treasury, and the Treasury prints up $1 billion worth of bills, Federal Reserve notes, doesn't matter what the denomination is, and to go with it, they pin up $1 billion worth of bonds. And both of them are delivered to the Federal Reserve. Because the bonds are the true faith and credit of the United States. That's who they're talking about. You think it's the dollar. It's the bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And the bondholders, that promise is to the bondholders that they're going to get their coupon payments every time they're due. Because they're going to take it right out of your rear end and give it to them. See anything new here so far in a little over an hour, Deanna?
Yeah. It's really putting the pieces together. Wow.
Okay. So that action and the fact that on March the 9th of 33, the whole country was put into this system, would you consider that to be a fraud?
It was certainly a great big huge deception.
Okay, well, it is a fraud. And the color of law that you're a voluntary serf in the feudal system is absolutely ridiculous. And that's why they recognize that one sentence when you send it to the right guy.
Wow.
Okay, here's two things. Go way back. Let's go in the way back machine to the Declaration of Independence. There's 11 offenses listed in that document against the king. You remember those? I'm going to quote a couple to you.
Go ahead.
The first one is, he has erected multitudes of offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass us and eat our substance.
Yes.
And we'll cover the other one when we get back.
Yes, we'll be right back. May I remind you that you may ask questions in the chat room, and we've posted the links and other really informative information. The chat room is spingola.chatango.com. And our guest is Roger Sayles, S-A-Y-L-E-S, and the website is SovereignToSurf.com. We're talking about something that is applicable to every single person in the United States and elsewhere.
Citizen of the United States, anywhere on the globe.
Right.
This is targeted at you.
Yes.
Any in the United States that have naturalized, this is targeted at you.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you why this is important, Deanna. Put it in perspective. I think this is it's important to me. There's only been a few periods of time in the recorded history of our planet when men have had God-given rights. The first 200 years of Rome and the first 200 years of our country. If that doesn't ring of importance to you, you better look at it again.
Okay. When you're talking about our country, what date are you pinpointing?
Well, from the beginnings until they switched the system on March the 9th of 33, both of these statuses were active. And everybody knew, because after the Civil War, they all knew what a citizen of the United States was, because they were black.
Mm-hmm. There were shenanigans. I think there were shenanigans way before that.
Before we went to the break, I gave you one of the complaints against the king. Let me repeat it again. He has erected multitudes of offices And this is beautiful language. He has erected multitudes of offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass us and eat out our substance. Does that sound like what's going on today?
Yes.
Okay, now there's another one in there. And it says, he has brought in a foreign jurisdiction. Do you think the feudal system's foreign to the United States of America?
Yes. Does it exist elsewhere?
All over the world, because this is the New World Order.
Yes. This is the New World Order.
And I would give you the proof on that. When Obama went over to Paris and signed that global peace, that Trump was the first thing, the second thing he yanked us out of, that Biden was the first thing he put us back into?
Yes.
Okay. Now, in that document, at that first signing, they added two new clauses to the treaty. One, that every child born in the world has a birth certificate. And two, that every child has identification linked to that birth certificate.
Oh, my gosh.
And I can tell you what the key word to the whole New World Order is, because I've been living outside the country for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
The key word to the New World Order is resident, because every country wants you to be one.
There are a lot of people who say, oh, I want to get away from this system I'm living under. I'll leave the country. Leaving the country is insufficient for what you're attempting to do.
It depends. You know, what's really critical is you change your status. If you leave the country and go try and open up a bank account, you got this little thing called FINCA. And they go, no, we can't open a bank account for who? Who can't they open a bank account for, Deanna?
For a United States citizen.
Citizens of the United States and residents of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But in a Wall Street article, when that legislation was passed dealing with an American gal who'd had her accounts closed, she was in Switzerland married to a Swiss guy.
Mm-hmm.
And down in the Wall Street Journal article says, however, we do have exceptions for U.S. nationals.
Wow.
Now, why is that? What is the rubber meets the road here? The rubber meets the road's that term we've discussed, jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
How do they have the ability to make man-made laws and apply them to me? Because you're one of their property. And not only that, every time they've asked you your entire life, you've agreed with them. So what the hell else are they supposed to assume and presume?
Right.
They're going to roll on with the authority that you gave them that they have via fraud that you didn't know you'd agreed to.
Right.
But then once they receive that paper at the State Department, everything changes.
Now, prior to the program this morning, we were talking about Trump. And
Can we just stay on subject here and not drift off on that?
Okay. Sure.
Because that's conjecture and this is fact, and we want to deal with the facts here.
Okay.
All right. Now, what I'd like for you to do, if you're out there in the audience, you can do this very easily. You can confirm everything I'm telling you. How do these people control us now in this system? They control us exactly like Thomas Jefferson said, with multitudes of officers and of swarms of officers, don't they?
Right.
It's called the administrative state. You know there wasn't an administrative state before March the 9th of 1933?
Yeah.
It's all grown since that time.
Oh, right. The bureaus and all of the bureaucracies.
All the agencies.
Right.
That's the word.
The bureaucracies, yes.
It's the bureaucracy, but they work for agencies.
Right.
Okay. Now, how do the agencies control? Well, here's the way a law is made, all right? It's either brought up in the House or the Senate. They have to agree. If they don't agree on the two separate bills, they go into a conference committee till they do agree. When they've come to an agreement, they give it to the president. He signs it. At that point, it's considered to be constitutional. Okay? Then it's put into a group of law books in the law library. If you go in there, they got a bunch of dust on them because nobody ever goes over there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're called the statutes at large. And that's the organic laws of the country. guess what? If you go to volume one of the statutes at large, the organic laws, guess what's the first thing you see, Deanna?
Ask me again.
If you go to the statutes at large, that group of, you know, I like to ask questions, okay? Mm-hmm. If you go to that book over there with all the dust that nobody ever goes and looks at, mm-hmm. it's the real law of the country, and you open up volume one, what do you think's the first thing you see? I'll tell you. The Declaration of Independence.
Oh.
And the second thing you see, second or third, I might have them mixed up, is the Articles of Confederation.
Right.
And the third thing you see is the Northwest Territory. Mm-hmm. And the fourth thing you see is the Constitution, the original one, before mm-hmm. they changed it. It's the Constitution of the United States of America, not the Constitution of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because it was pre-14th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
All this stuff, all these people floating around, oh, they were named a corporation in 1871. Have you seen that?
Right.
All right. Well, that was 1871. Let's go back about 3 years to 1867 when they passed the 14th Amendment, and it says subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Is that not singular?
Right, yes.
Is that not 3 years before they were incorporated in 1871?
Yes.
Okay. So does that maybe make you think that that's a little bit of mis or disinformation? Or somebody that doesn't really understand what they're talking about? Like the people that say these phrases. They make money out of thin air. Or how about this one that I've heard people, attorneys like Sidney Powell and Lynn Wood make? They can't take away my constitutional rights.
We have no rights under the Constitution.
What rights? What's the only rights that piece of paper gives you?
To the people who signed that piece
of paper. Nope. The only rights they give you are civil rights given to black slaves after the Civil War.
The rest of
the document is protections for people that have God-given rights. They're the ones that can access a Bill of Rights. People with civil rights can't.
Okay. It's a big distinction.
Yeah, kinda.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay, so what I'm doing here today is trying to simply as I've learned how to do in almost 30 years is to show you directly with opposites how they've tricked you and how they've done it so effectively when some of the nation's top attorneys get up and make the absurd statement they can't mess with my constitutional rights. They're admitting they're slaves.
Yes.
That's how well this has been hidden and how slick it's been done. Because, man, it is slick. Let me tell you one thing. You thought you knew these bastards before, Deanna?
Mm-hmm.
You ain't never going to know them like you do when you internalize this information.
Right.
Because who are they? They're history slavers.
Mm-hmm.
They've been slavers since Babylon, and they're slavers today. They've just figured out a slick way to do it that fits Goethe's. There are none so as hopelessly enslaved as those who falsely get up and sing Lee Greenwood songs.
Right. Oh, gosh.
Okay?
Yes.
Now, I ask you to go to have a couple of documents open when we're on the program today. I sent you the links. One of them is Title 26 CFR, and the other is a DS 11, which is an application for the first time passport applicant. Do you have those?
Let's see. The document I have open, certificate of non citizen.
Yeah, hold on a second.
Put the other one in the chat room and I'll put that up. I'll post it in our chat room.
Okay. So, if you're out there in the audience, go into a search engine and put 26 CFR 1.1-1.
26 FR dash.
Okay, then you can get that up.
Dash
you,
three. Wait,
no, 1.1-1, right at the very first. You could probably put just 26 CFR and it come up, but this is the right at the very first. There's a jurisdictional statement there I want to go over with you.
Okay.
And then I want you to also bring up a first-time application, or you could do a renewal too, but first-time application for a passport is called a DS-11. But let's go back to our administrative state. We'll get to those in just a second, okay? The law then goes into the statutes at large, and then it's taken whole meal or part meal or maybe no meal at all, and it's transferred over into a group of law books called the United States Code. That's what you see everybody refer to, okay? And then underneath the United States Code, there's 50 titles. Underneath the United States Code are a group of law books, the rule books of the agencies, and those are called Code of Federal Regulations, CFR. Okay. And those are the rules for the bureaucrats that come out and ding you. Your congressman doesn't ever come ding you, does he?
No.
Who comes and dings you? An agency, IRS or
right.
whatever, right? Well,
right.
This is their rule book, okay? And they got real strict rules and regulations. They can't go outside of their delegated responsibility when they're dealing with you. Or else they lose their government cloak of immunity, and now they become personally liable, and you can go sue them and take everything they own. Does that sound good?
Yeah. No.
If that happened to a couple of them, you think it might straighten some of them out and get their attention?
Wow.
Okay? So this Code of Federal Regulations is real important, and just as a little aside, if any of you have done legal research, I assume some people have, if you go to the United States Code there and open up the first page there, they're going to tell you that all these 50 titles, well, they got two categories, and some of them are non-positive law, and some of them are positive law, but they don't really tell you what that is. But it sounds kind of strange, doesn't it? Non-positive law and positive law?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, here's the difference. If they pull that legislation over from the statutes at large that we talked about earlier, the organic laws,
mm-hmm.
if they pull it over whole cloth and put it into a section of the code, it's now positive law. But if it was taken piecemeal, or maybe not even in there at all, it's called non-positive law. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the United States Code is Roman civil law. It's what changed Rome from God's laws to man's laws. Same thing here, okay? Now, if the reason I say non-positive is I'm going to give you an example that wasn't in, never went to the Senate, never signed by the President, never put in the statutes at large, and it controls every one of your lives out there. Title 26. Title 26 is income tax. Title 26 was only passed by the House of Representatives. It was never passed by the Senate, never signed by the President, and it's in the United States Code. Why is that? Because the House of Representatives has exclusive jurisdiction over D.C., don't they?
Right.
And you've told them you were a resident, which means you're a federal citizen.
Yes.
Get it? You're starting to get it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, with that explanation, I'm going to tell you this. If you go to every one of those 50 titles of the Code of Federal Regulations, their jurisdictional statement, which is who they can exercise this power on, is on the front page. In 49 of them, the jurisdictional statement is residence. Only one, Title 26, do they have both statuses in there. Why? Well, for one thing, because they had to make it constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This scheme has been deemed constitutional, believe it or not. It's not constitutional, it's kind of extra constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Now, in that title, they had to put both statuses in there because they've got to comply to Constitution. And besides, if they had a loophole like this and they wouldn't have to pay taxes, do you think they might take advantage of it?
Right.
Yeah, I've maintained for a long time, if you could get a FOIA into the Secretary of State and see who's got affidavits on file, you know who'd have them. The big hedge funds, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
There's your music. We'll hold it right there, okay?
Okay, we will be right back. Our guest is Roger Sales, and his website is sovereigntosurf.com, where you can sign up for his newsletter, which I encourage you to do. And we were looking at the let's see which document we were looking at, uscode.house.gov, and there are 54 documents here.
No, let's not get these confused. We were looking earlier at a certificate that's official State Department policy. What we're talking about now is the structure on how policy is enforced.
Okay.
Well, let me ask you, do you think that, say, health and OSHA, can they go down here to Ecuador and pick some guy, you're violating OSHA regulations, we're going to charge you? Can they do that?
If he's a citizen of the United States, yes.
Well, yeah, maybe. But if he's a resident of Ecuador, they can't, because then Ecuador's laws apply to them.
Okay.
And their only jurisdiction is residence, not citizen.
Oh, okay.
All right. That's what I told you. There's 50 of these titles to the Code of Federal Regulations. They're the enforcement arm of the bureaucratic state, the administrative state. And this is how they use man-made laws called little laws, because they're made by bureaucrats. Your congressman doesn't make these laws. They make the laws, and then the bureaucrats interpret them and put them into regulation form.
Right.
Okay. So we were talking about the 50 titles of regulations, 49 of the 50, their jurisdictional statement, their jurisdictional statement on the front page is residence stated. Only in this one is it different, Title 26, because they had to, and because it's a nice little loophole that nobody understands that they can take advantage of. You know, these creeps, as much as they can steal, they don't like paying taxes on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Okay, a few of them at the top know this, and I can tell you why. I can give you a perfect example. Remember when Tiny Tim Geithner, TurboTax Timmy, was in front of the Senate,
right,
getting confirmed for Treasury Secretary, and they said, "You haven't paid your income tax in 5 years. Oh, my TurboTax messed up." Remember that? BS. I'm calling BS. The reason Tiny Tim didn't pay income tax is he's got an affidavit on file and he don't owe him. Okay, now, did you get Title 26 brought up there, Deanna?
I did.
Okay, now, I'd like for you to read, there at the first, 1.1-1A, is their jurisdictional statement. And I want you to read it to the audience.
Wait,
income tax is placed on all individuals, is how it starts.
In the front matter.
Here, let me just quote it to you, okay?
Yeah.
An income tax is owed by all individuals. It's important that they use that particular word. An income tax is owed by all individuals who are citizens of the United States and residents. Are you with me yet? You find it on the page? And to the extent of 871B and 877B, all non-resident alien individuals. Well, here's my first question. What's Jose the tomato picker doing paying income tax?
Right.
Okay, well, we got a little musical interlude, and we'll be back to answer
that question.
We'll
be right back. It's the top of the hour. We will be right back.
is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Sales. His website is sovereigntoserve.com, and we were talking about income tax and all kinds of things. Just an amazing amount of information. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to tell you something, Deanna. You're not going to get this at one setting. Okay? It's going to take you a while. If you're hearing this, to work through it. Now let me tell you why. Because they've tied your mind in a double-minded knot with equivocation. So what the individual has to do is go back to each one of these terms, citizen of the United States, resident, individual, all these terms where there's a double knot tied, and you gotta untie it in your subconscious, because that's where you're enslaved. Now, every time you do that, you get a little slice of reality and consciousness back. It's a process. It's not an event. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to do is to show you what they've done so that you can go back and put the time in to doing that for yourself. And that's the empowerment process. Every time you do that, you get a little more slice of reality and you lose your slave thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And it eventually makes you extremely, extremely powerful internally. And maybe you'll get, I've seen it happen with my students. I know it's happened with me, and I've seen it happen with my students. And you get to a point where you're not scared of any man on the whole face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you got the power that God meant for you to have at birth that was stolen from you under this fraud that you were born into voluntary servitude that's set up so you agree with it the rest of your life not knowing you're functionally illiterate. Okay? I told you this is slick. The deeper you study it, the more you understand it, the more you're going to be amazed at our enemy. And let me just say this, the more you're going to gain a healthy respect for them. I didn't say you had to like them, okay? You can respect somebody and hate them at the same time, but you respect them because you know their capabilities and how they work. And that's why I'm spending the time on this, and that's why I spend the time on this every day for my radio program, to help. And it's just, you know, you eat an elephant one bite at a time. Okay, that's how this has got to be done. Because even the top people in our movement that want to do good don't know this and don't know how to be effective. Let me give you an example. Here's this gal, Fireplug, out of California, going around the country setting up citizen grand juries, right? And they go, we don't ever have any effect. They won't recognize our affidavits. I don't know. Why not? Well, because you're still a serf, and the serfs aren't going to get together and overthrow the lord of the manor. You don't have God-given rights. You can't bring the Constitution in. You can't do anything. You're just a stupid piece of federal property. That's why. Make sense?
Wow. Wow.
Okay. Let's go back to where we were when we were went into our little musical interlude there. We were at 26 CFR, Code of Federal Regulations, the income tax code, the one everybody just loves, the IRS. I call them the individuals representing Satan, okay, because they do, all right? Now, we looked at that jurisdictional statement. It said, an income tax is owed by every individual who's a citizen of the United States and a resident, and to the extent of 871B and 877B, all non-resident alien individuals. My first question was, what is Jose the tomato picker doing paying income tax?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a pretty good question?
It is, if he's doing that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now let me go back to something we all agreed on here at the start of the show. This is why I got your agreement on that. There's only two statuses. You're either free or you're a slave, right?
Right.
Okay, well, let's look at those two. We know which one's a slave now, don't we?
Yes.
Okay, well, how in the hell did they construe the free guy as a non-resident alien? How about if you're not under the 14th Amendment, you're a non-resident, not a resident? And how about if your original status is alien to the 14th Amendment slave status? You think that might be how it's being used? Exactly. Now I'm going to prove it to you. Now go over to the passport application. Got it? And I want you to go way to the back page. And that's where you put all the info in.
I see it. Okay. That's your
now, I want you to notice, I want you to notice down at the bottom, they got in real bold letters, capitalized, all capital letters. What does it say there, DM?
Please
you got
do not write below this line for issuing office only.
Well, that's not the one I was looking for. There's someplace, this is how you use the one online. Earlier up in here, they'll say, do not sign this form unless in the presence of an administrating official. That's usually right above the oath. Where is the oath on here? Oh, it's in the page. I think it's in the page above here.
Right. It is.
I'm looking at it online. I've always mostly dealt with, but it's here. We just have
okay. Okay.
Oh, here it is. And it says, stop. Continue to page two. Do not sign application until requested to do so by authorized agent. Doesn't it say that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it says in the instructions that if it's a little one-horse town post office, because you always go to the post office to do this, if you're in a one-horse town and they don't have an administrative officer, agent, guess what they want you to do, Deanna? They want you to go in front of a judge and sign it.
Oh, my gosh.
Have you ever seen a government document where they said don't sign it unless you're in the presence of an official and could not one go to a judge? Have you ever seen one of those?
No.
Why is this so different?
Wow.
Now, I'm going to tell you why the Secretary of State has the authority he does and why he's the Lord of the Manor. Because he issues passports. If you're going to issue a passport, it's a document that's recognized by foreign nations and telling them who you are and letting them pass freely and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if he's got to issue you one for one that you are, he's got to know which political status you are, doesn't he?
Right.
So what I'm going to show you here is how they trick you. Okay. Now, go underneath that and read the oath. You see the oath down there, a couple below that?
I declare under penalty of perjury all of the following. I am a citizen or non-citizen national of the United States and have not, since acquiring U.S. citizenship or nationality, performed any of the acts limited under acts
listed
or conditions.
Not limited, listed. Listed in the acts and conditions.
Oh, listed, okay. Not listed under acts of... It's very, very small print. Let me just make
yes, it is. Yes, it is. Now, after that, they've got a parentheses right there, and they say, unless explanatory statement is attached, don't they?
Yes.
I'm
going to
tell you, they've changed the oath. They've changed the oath on the passport since I started teaching this stuff to cover their butts.
Oh my gosh.
All right. But so here above that, let me tell you what it used to say. It used to say, I swear under penalty of perjury that I'm a citizen of the United States, parentheses, or a non-citizen national, close parentheses, and have not since acquiring United States citizenship, parentheses, or U.S. nationality, non-citizen nationality. And then it goes, so before they were clearly differentiated, okay? And so here's what they were doing. Somebody that is taking the time to read that, I'm sure there are very few people that would do that, and they say, I swear under penalty of perjury I'm a citizen of the United States, or what's this, a non-citizen national? Well, I don't know what that is, but I know I'm a citizen, so I can't be one of them.
Oh.
Get it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so there it is. And then underneath that it says if you violated any of the acts and conditions, there they tell you to put an explanatory statement in the oath and attach it. Well, why don't they tell you to do something with this very peculiar, different political status mentioned twice before that immediately?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they do tell you. They just don't tell you in the oath.
Right.
Where they tell you is up in the body of this document. I believe it's on page 2. Now, scroll back up to page 2. And let me see if I can find it here. I thought I spotted it earlier. It's at the bottom of page 1. Okay. And that is in federal nomenclature. That's called a black box warning.
Right.
And they
false
put it on dangerous drugs and stuff.
Right. False statements made knowingly and willingly in passport applications, including affidavits or other documents submitted to support this application, are punishable by fine and or imprisonment under U.S. law.
And they list about 7 or 8 different sections of the United States.
That nobody knows what they're signing, really.
Well, all right. Now, what if I was to rephrase it, say, you can attach documentation, including declarations and affidavits, which make clear your political status upon application with a passport. But they don't put it like that, do they? They put it at the absolute opposite. It's not at the last page. It's at the bottom of the first page. And they put it in totally threatening and intimidating language. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that's your get out of jail card right there. That's where they're telling you you can get out.
Wow. So this is the document that we would use...
Well, let's go into that. It's one of them. It's one of them, and I think it's the legal term is the higher and better document of application, because when you do this, it's going to cost you $100-something, but when you do it, you get back the highest form of identification that now correctly identifies you, and I'm going to tell you, I don't know this for sure, it's hearsay. It's because somebody told me this, that you had a friend with top secret clearance.
And
I'll give you an example of this, because we had an example of it. Both those pieces of information came within a week each other year before last, in January. And what they do is evidently when you give somebody the passport and they can see your profile on the other side, and you can't, you're listed as a diplomatic courier. And the reason for that, I'm just thinking through here what I know, would you agree they've gone to great lengths to hide this on what we've covered?
Absolutely. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, now, they're not going to have, for the bureaucracy, they're not going to have a space over there they can check. And this guy's a state citizen and figured out what we were doing and caught us. They don't want the bureaucrats saying, what is this section over here, this state citizen thing? So they put it under diplomatic courier because they would have the same hands-off approach on a state citizen that they would on a diplomatic carrier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, that was told to me by one of my listeners who is an IT guy that worked for about 15 different agencies. And he said, I filed paperwork. I didn't ask him what type. It doesn't really matter what type as long as you rebut the presumption. I file paperwork, and I don't have top secret clearance, but I got a friend who does, and he checked it and told me this. That's where I got that from. Now, about a week later, I had the first naturalized, because anybody can do this. If you've been naturalized, if you've been born, anybody can do this, right? And so I had a gal call me from Texas. Her name is Victoria, I believe. And she's married to a naturalized American. He was a Mexican, came into California when he was 5, naturalized at a very young age, had been served in the military and all that, and he was retired. And they got turned on to my message, and they wanted to do it. And he was the first one that was a naturalized guy. I'd had whites and I've had blacks, but I'd never had a naturalized guy. So they got my full attention. Okay, so I told Victoria what I would tell any of your listeners. If you got questions and you're real scared and paranoid and you want to have a private consultation, I'm going to charge you. I'm going to charge you $150 an hour. Okay, but if you want to call into my radio show and ask it where everybody can learn, I'm going to do it for free. Which do you prefer? Okay, well, she preferred the radio approach. So we got on the air, answered all of her questions. She wrote up all the paperwork and applied for both of them, and they got passports and passport cards, which you can pay extra and get, a little pocket card. And so then nothing happened, didn't hear from them. Well, they went out evidently to California for Christmas, and they must have driven a car out or something because they only flew back one way. And she called me after this happened. She said, Roger, you won't believe. She said, we went to LAX. We presented our passport cards to board the plane. The agent took them, and he put us in the long line where you have to take off your shoes and your belt. And she said, he came running over and grabbed us and said, I'm sorry, I put you in the wrong line, and grabbed him and ran him through the express line.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, why would that have happened? Because he looked at their passport in the back screen and saw they were diplomatic courier listed and shot them through the speed one.
Gosh.
Okay. So I suggest in perilous times like this, first of all, you don't have the new position if you can't defend it. So your freedom's not in what you're going to send to the Secretary of State. Your freedom's in knowing and understanding this information. So if anybody confronts you with them, you can be a belligerent claimant. Like Judge Learned Hand said, the only way to claim one's rights is to be a belligerent claimant. And if you don't know the information, you can't be belligerent.
Okay.
Your freedom is not in the paper. Your freedom is in the knowledge. That's how we change things. If I was to get on here and say, Deanna, any of your listeners, if you'll pay me $1,000, I'll send you the magic paperwork. And I'd get $1,000, and you'd get one sentence on a piece of paper, and you'd file it, and you'd never study or learn anything, would you?
Right.
And nothing would change, would it?
Right.
You couldn't explain it to somebody else. Hey, listen, you got $1,000, send it to old Rod, she'll send you one sentence piece of paper, and you're out of this deal.
Okay, the first step that people want to take is to apply for this U.S. passport.
Well, no, let's finish.
Okay.
That's not necessarily right, because there's some people out there that are really hard times, and they can't afford $100-something.
Oh, okay.
And you didn't have to go to the Lord of the Manor and say, give me a passport, I'm out of here. All you had to do is tell him you're out of there.
Oh, okay.
So you could take that one sentence and send it to the State Department, Attention Administrative Records, with a nice little cover letter, like dripping with honey, and say, will you please place this permanently and firmly in my administrative file?
Okay, which... Specifically, which sentence on which page?
Oh, the certificate of non-citizen nationality, that one sentence.
Okay.
That'll get you out. Now, if you've been verbose and you want to put other stuff in there, you can. But that one sentence will get you out. And that's according to the State Department public policy document.
Okay. And that one sentence is found... Read it to us.
Well, I'll have to dig up my certificate. I can find it. It's at the bottom of the form called a Certificate of Non-Citizen Nationality. It's at the website travel.state .gov. Okay? And the document that is containing what I'm going to show you is with the one we've been discussing. Certificate of Non-Citizen Nationality. And there's the music, and we'll pick that up when we get back, right, Deanna?
Right. Be right back.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me.
Alrighty, we are back. Roger Sales. His website is sovereigntosurf.com. And we were talking about the document, what you need to do in order to leave the matrix.
Yes.
That is what we're talking about on this program, not how to make elderberry wine or any of that nonsense, okay? We're talking about something very important.
Your freedom.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, we were discussing the certificate, this one sentence, but let me just say, this is something I've learned. I mean, the affidavit I filed with them was 5 pages long. It had all kind of court sites in it and legal stuff. John and Glenn wrote it up. We have submitted them to the IRS, and we all got $500 frivolous filing penalties because we didn't know to submit it to the Secretary of State with the ultimate authority where we could change our status. That's how you change it. You can't take it to a district court. You can't get it in an appellate court. You can't get it any way from the bottom up because none of those guys are going to recognize it because you haven't done it with the right guy, their boss. He's the lord of the manor. You're in the feudal system, whether you know it or not.
Okay.
So all you're doing is rebutting a presumption that you've erroneously agreed to because you didn't understand what they were asking you all your life. Mm-hmm. You can do it in a lot of different ways, okay? But what you're basically doing is rebutting the presumption. Instead of this sentence I'm going to read you, you could put this. I'm not related to black slaves who received federal citizenship with civil rights after the Civil War. My parents were white from time out of mind. Bam. Done. All you're doing is rebutting a presumption of law that's based on another fact that's fraud.
Okay.
That's why they recognize it, because it's fraud, and fraud is vitiated any contract from the beginning. That's why they recognize it. I can give you a much more complex issue, but I'm trying to keep this very surface and simple.
Right.
And as I said a minute ago, there ain't one of you that's listening to this that hadn't been exposed to it before that's going to totally wrap your arms around it by the time we're finished. It's going to take some effort from your part. I'm going to tell you a statement. I know it's hard to believe, but freedom is not free. It takes some effort.
Right.
Okay? And the freedom you're going to gain is in your mind, not in the paper. That's your diploma that you've graduated that represents that you know something and can defend your position. Because let me tell you, none of these agents that ever approach you are going to know this. All they know is if you're one of these two categories, they get to ding you. And if you're not, they don't. And if they do, they are personally liable. But that's what they know. Okay? So, we could dig deep. Man, listen, I can dig deep in this for 4 or 5 hours straight if you want to, if we had the time. That's why I'm trying to cover it on the surface here. I have a daily radio show, 5 days a week, 2 hours, with no commercial interruptions, intentionally, so we can get into this stuff and not lose people's attention.
Right.
Okay? It was designed for that reason right there. Okay? Now, let's go to the one sentence at the bottom here of this document, this official State Department policy document. Disregard the garbage and the smokescreen that's in the front. That's to throw you off. Okay?
Okay, and you are on document travelstate.gov.
Yes. We're reading straight from a State Department document, Certificate of Non-Citizen Nationality, talking about American Samoans. Okay? And here's a statement that'll get you out of this shooting match, and this is how simple it is. I, Deanna Spingola, being duly sworn, hereby declare my intention to be a national but not a citizen of the United States. Put it in affidavit form, get it notarized, send it to them. You can send it to them with a passport application, or you can send it to them cold. If you send it to them cold, do it with return receipt requested, and you will not have a document that identifies your new status. Send it with a passport application. It'll cost you a little over $100, and for 10 years, you got a document that's attached to that statement right there.
Okay.
Okay. Now, this is another indication of what I'm talking about is true. The penalty of perjury on a notarized document is legally called a jurat, J-U-R-A-T. Okay? We know it as penalty of perjury. If you go into the United States Code, I think it's Title 27, Section 1746, I think. I'm not real good on always remembering that stuff exactly, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is. And they've got two jurats in there, two penalties of perjury in the United States Code. And one of them says this is the one you use within the federal government, and the other one says this is the one without the federal government, within and without. Interesting phraseology, right? Okay. Now, what's the difference? The one within says, I swear under penalty of the United States, above true and correct, whatever. The one without says, I declare under penalty of perjury under the United States of America. That's the difference. One's the United States, that's the federal corporation. The other is the United States of America, the national operation.
Mm-hmm.
It's right there in the United States Code. So do the one without on your declaration, your affidavit.
All righty, we will be right back.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony.
All right, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Roger Sales, and we are talking about escaping the matrix, and I assume that is what we all would like to do, and when you
don't assume that. There's a lot of people that, because they're scared, because they don't learn the information, they don't get the self-confidence so they can take action, so they can stay in the pink cloud where they get all the goodies. Not everybody wants to do this. I've been shocked doing this, and the people I put it in front of, dear friends of mine, that won't take a step forward on it. So don't assume that everybody will, okay? And that's my experience. It's, you know, this is something I learned a long time ago, Deanna. You can't want something for somebody worse than they want it for themselves. It leads to a lot of heartache, okay?
Yes, okay.
All right, now what I was trying to do back when we're talking about the passport application and CFR 26 is I want to show you how slick these bastards are, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, they know, and now we know, there's only two statuses. You're either free or you're a slave, okay? And we know that they've gone to great lengths to hide this. As we just went over, they're in the Internal Revenue Code, and income taxes owed by all individuals who are citizens of the United States and residents, and to 871B is at 77B extent, all non-resident alien individuals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what they couldn't say. An income tax is owed by all individuals who are citizens of the United States and residents, and to the extent of 871B and 877B, all U.S. nationals.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't say that. Because then everybody, well, look, I don't know what a national is, but I'm going to go look and see because he only owes two sections of the code. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, in the passport application we just read, it says, I swear under penalty of perjury that I'm a citizen of the United States, who used to say, they've changed it a little bit, or non-citizen, national, et cetera, right? We covered that. Well, how would it if it was phrased this way? I swear that I'm a citizen of the United States or a non-resident alien. And then somebody looking at us can go, what the hell is a non-resident alien doing applying for a passport? See? Now, we know there's only two statuses. You're either free or you're a slave. You see how they change the labels here to confuse you?
Sure.
Okay, now I'm going to show you one a level deeper. The only political status that is a non-citizen national are the American Samoans. Why? Because this document tells us they're nationals, non-citizen nationals, because they can't be birthright citizens. That's what they call it, birthright citizenship, okay? They've got to naturalize to get that status. But then they take and change the state citizen to national, and they hide it behind the non-citizen national.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to prove this to you. Back to the earlier statement we discussed in this document, a national owes complete allegiance to a small S state. And then below it, it says a capital S state, and it shows you the federal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In IRS publication 519, they make this statement. A national owes complete allegiance to the U.S. So anybody reading an IRS publication, and what they should have said and left out is a non-citizen national owes total allegiance to the U.S. But in the IRS publication, they take the non-citizen identifier out to confuse you.
Wow.
You are playing with the slickest sons of Satan bitches that have ever walked the face of this earth. What I've done today is expose them to you, their deepest, darkest secret, because this is the way it enables them to make man-made laws and apply them to you through the administrative agencies. At the same time, they collateralize and securitize you and use you as the basis for the world's reserve currency. This is the taproot of the Rockefeller-Rothschild axis right here that we've been talking about and I've been showing you all day. If you're not one of those, the IRS doesn't apply to you. They can't extract anything from you anymore. And they can't attach any of the man-made laws because all their the domestic terrorists, all this crap they're putting out there, they're only for citizens of the United States and residents. If you're not one of those, they're not you. They got no jurisdiction. You think this is important?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You better believe it is. If you ain't realized it and you've been listening to this, let me just tell you, it's important. It's the nexus of the whole scam.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's go over a couple of other things that for the people that do want to do this, this is how you protect yourself, and this is what's going on. We're about to have a Super Bowl tomorrow, right?
Oh.
It's basketball season. The feds invited the Patriots to play a game, winner take all. We, being who we are, accepted. So we get out the day of the game, and we're out there in our Nikes and our little shorts on the court, the hard court, and we're like doing layups and sinking every three-pointer we try, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the feds come out, and they're not having Nikes and shorts on. They got these funny shoes with this long piece of metal on it, and they got all these pads on. They got sticks, and they're throwing this thing that's hard as steel around at 100 miles an hour. Deanna, who you think's going to win that game?
Yeah, it's very obvious.
You see, we've been playing constitutional law, and they've been playing commercial law, and the field's been tilted at 45 degrees, and we didn't know what the rules were.
Right.
Once you file that affidavit, that playing field levels out, and now we all got access to the same common law, because now that's what you're under.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Okay.
So, what do you do when the playing field is level? Well, the basis of every operational law and every body of law in the world is a magic little phrase called due process. You ever heard it?
Oh, yes. Yes.
You know what due process is?
Explain it. I'm sure I don't.
Notice and the right to be heard.
Oh,
notice.
Right.
And okay. The right to be heard.
Sure.
So we can weaponize it now that we know the levels, playing field's level and what we're playing with, don't we?
Sure.
Well, why don't you take that affidavit and weaponize it? You've already put it with the head guy that's in charge of all decisions concerning citizenship for the entire country, Secretary of State.
Right.
Now the playing field's notice and you're free, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you need to put everybody on notice, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Because now if they've been put on notice and they don't do right, guess what happens to them? Now they're personally liable.
Right.
Okay. So what you do is you take a copy of that affidavit that you filed and you put a nice little cover letter on it and you send it to the Attorney General of your state. He's in charge of all the laws in the state, right?
Right.
All the legal people in the state are under him in one way or another, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So you write up there, notice to the principals, notice to the agent. And you say, this is on file with the Secretary of State. Would you please put this in my personal administrative file and alert all of your agents? They better not mess with me. And then you copy your sheriff, you copy your chief of police if you got one, and you copy your district attorney. Now you've put all them on notice along with the Attorney General of your state. Now here's what's going to happen. Let's say you're driving along, get a traffic ticket. Go ahead and sign it. You might have. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of suggestions on this and ways to deal with it. I'm not going to go into them here and muddy the water. Okay? But you can even go so far as to write out something that you hand to the officer with the ticket that you sign. Okay. Now he goes back and turns that ticket in and it eventually gets up to the guy that's going to put cases on the docket for court. He's the district attorney.
Mm-hmm.
He's got your notice. He sees this come through. What are the chances you think he's going to docket that case?
Probably won't.
Not unless he wants to get sued. Now you've weaponized your freedom.
Wow.
Is the information complex? Yes. Is getting out of it and standing for your position complex? Not really. Now here's what you do with the IRS. That's the other big tooth monster here. You take that affidavit, you write a nice little cover letter, but at the whole first top of the page, you're going to put in big, bold, capital letters, legal, lawful notice, not to be construed as a filing. And you put notice in bold, underline, and you put not to be construed as a filing in bold, underline. Because the only defense the IRS has got now is to hit you with a $5,000 frivolous filing penalty. But legal notice isn't filing, is it? It's legal notice. So they turn around and say, oh, this is a $5,000, but it used to be $500, now it's $5,000. Okay? And we had one of the guys do that, and I wrote him a nice letter back. We've got a wonderful site, and my big computer's in the shop, in the hospital. I get it back tomorrow, so I'm working off somewhere. I don't have all my normal resources at my fingertips. Mm-hmm. But we got a great site from an 1835 case on this issue right here. And DeBicu versus DRC. It's got some weird style, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it was in 1835, and the court said, it's addressing this, and it said, it, a passport, is rather in the nature of a political document that allows bearers to pass undisturbed between countries and countries and adheres to the law of nations. That's a Vattel's law of nations. It's very important.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It says, however, if this is to be brought forth in a court of law on citizenship, it's an entirely different question. The passport is an ex parte document. That means a separate part. And what really matters is whatever paperwork that the Secretary of State has in his possession, if admissible in a court of law, should be considered the higher and better evidence. So it's not the passport. It's the paperwork in your declaration. And in fact, from 1835, if you've sent it to the Secretary of State and they get you in any court, because it's in his possession, you can bring it into court and it bypasses the rules of evidence. They can't keep it out.
Okay. So they won't try and take you to court.
Well, listen, you ain't never going to see the inside of a courtroom. You think they want that document in the courtroom?
No.
Now, I can tell you I've had it admitted into court one time. One of my students married a foreigner, had a child, brought her parents over here for the grandchild. He's filed the affidavit and understands. They think he's a sovereign citizen being demonized by the television. So they get divorced and they get in a child custody battle. And the parents filed the affidavit and my book and my name in their pleadings. So they get it into court. They get into court, they call him up on the stand, and he pulls out the affidavit and starts reading it. What do you think happened?
Yeah.
The judge says, don't read that document in this courtroom.
Wow.
So that's what you're dealing with. If you want to be free, no matter how scared you are, you've been intimidated your whole life by these black robe armed bastards that break into people's houses and stuff, and I can understand where people have that. This information is meant for you to study and absorb and get over that, start to become empowered, where hopefully you get to a point where you'll take action. All the knowledge in the world ain't worth a spit if you don't take action. Take action. Tell them who you are. Because, see, they can't tell you who they are. That's why they've tried to do this. If they tell you who you are, well, that's tyranny, isn't it?
Right.
They don't like to be known as open tyrants, do they?
No.
That's why they've gone to all this trouble to ask you those questions you don't understand, so you agree with their fraud.
Wow.
Now, listen, there's a lot to chew. There's a lot to chew on here. And there's probably a lot we hadn't even touched on. But
right.
We just don't have time in 3 hours to do it.
Right.
This was thought up in the bowels of the City of London, probably in a Masonic lodge in Paris, the Orient Lodge, when they conjured up Satan.
Yes.
Because God's plan is freedom and Satan's plan is slavery and there ain't no other plans.
Right. Wow.
So at this point, I've covered a lot of the high point stuff. I was hoping we could get through it earlier, but we didn't. Do you have any questions, Deanna, or does anybody in your audience want to call in with questions?
Okay, there's a caller who's been on the line. So let's take Mike in Kentucky. Is it Mike?
Hey,
Mike.
I'm here.
Okay.
You gotta push the button there for me. I think you gotta push the button. Hello?
I hear you.
Oh, okay. Usually I hear a big burst of static when the board off puts me on the air. I never did hear that. Okay. Well, listen, this sort of stuff I've been following since, I'd say, the early 90s, something that was originally called Cancelatura, which they were trying to cancel out your status, you know, using different affidavits. And I know a paralegal that worked on different aspects of this for a long time, he contacted the state Secretary of State, I think in Kentucky, who was surprised when he said he was a state citizen, and the retort was, well, I didn't think there was any state citizens left. In other words...
You see, here's the problem, is the state... The state Secretary of State is now the guy you contact to start a business and incorporate and stuff.
Right, now, he doesn't deal with state citizenship at all.
Well, because there isn't such a thing as a state citizen anymore. They've changed it to U.S. national. They changed the label.
Well, in their jurisdictions they have, but if you're born in the land of Kentucky, you know, what does that make your status?
Nope. When you're born, a verification of facts is entered. Your parents don't sign it. It's put into their computer that every government has a computer terminal in every hospital. They probably get paid $5,000 or $10,000 for each one of these that they produce. They send the information that's input over to the Bureau of Vital Statistics. That's where the birth certificate is printed. When it's printed, it's put into a bank vault and manned by armed guards 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah, I followed all that, and I've heard that sort of stuff before, and it's about making that commercial paper a surety for the national debt. They're leveraging
And that's how they did it. The birth certificate serving two functions. One, it identifies you and your birth. The other is it's a warehouse receipt. And that is where that particular commercial document, if you'll go read about it, a warehouse receipt takes on the quality of the good it represents. I'll give you a perfect example of this. It happened right in Deanna's town. You remember the MF Global fiasco when Corzine stole all the gold and intermixed their accounts? Do you remember that maybe 10 years ago, 15? MF Global, you remember that, Deanna?
Yes.
Well, I saw a headline on the newspaper the next day, and it was a trader down there at the Merck, and he says they can't have stolen the gold. We've got the warehouse receipts.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Piece of paper. Hey, listen, what I wanted to find out is where you were finding that Jurat statement. Where the difference between American national versus, United States citizen versus the United States of America.
It doesn't say that. It says this is a jurat within the United States. This is a jurat without the United States. I believe it's either Title 27 or Title 28. It's one of them, okay?
The
section is 1746, I think.
1746. Usually with the pieces of it, I can find it, the search suggestions. But that stuff, you do have all your stuff duplicated on other drives, thumb drives and stuff, I hope.
Oh, man, I got so much stuff all over the place.
Okay.
Listen, Mike,
that computer being down.
Well, but I've got all that stuff, and
You need to do something like Snowden and have a dead man switch to let some of this come out if they come out. You're saying that they've already modified some stuff since you started doing this?
That hadn't been a concern because, man, I got so few people that'll listen, they ain't worried about it.
Well, yeah, it becomes a problem when enough people start doing it. I heard years ago a guy was able to find his way to a passport for a U.S. national by going back to a paper copy that the postmaster in Florida had it, and he pulled it off the shelf and went right to the page. The guy signed it, and he goes, well, right here it is. He didn't even know it, and got himself a passport as a U.S. national.
Well,
but it wasn't in the computers,
No. Well, they see the statement on the passport on the cover page there is passports are only issued to citizens of the United States and nationals. Okay. So they cover themselves in the statement. I've got a radio show 5 days a week, Mike, and we've got our own network. It's called the People's Patriot Network. And if you get this document that Deanna has posted, all my contact information's at the bottom of the page. Okay. Second.
Yeah. I was looking that over. I've got contacts that have been in this movement for decades, and I'm going to send them a lot of this because, they've tried all kinds of weird tricks, that I've followed.
Nobody knows you're dealing in the feudal system. I'm going to make a statement that my teacher made is totally accurate. If you don't know you're dealing with the feudal system, you'll never do anything but shadow box with it.
Well, have you had anybody that has become stateless by mistake? You got to be careful that you don't become stateless, right? There's all kinds of warnings about that on the State Department's page.
There you go. Yesterday, the headline was on Zero Hedge, the record number of people expatriated last year, 6,000 and something, 4,000 the year before. Okay? Why do you want to expatriate when you can repatriate with the system, with the status they've hidden from you? because they don't tell you. They tell you in that warning box, hidden in threatening language. They're in the passport application.
Yeah, it's all over the webpage too.
I've been helping people do this probably close to 11 years, okay? And I've learned a lot, man. I didn't really understand this until the last year or two completely. I knew most of it, but I didn't realize that you're giving them your consent. The reason they're asking you the questions is to get your consent. It's not a nexus. When they ask you the questions, that's not the nexus. The nexus was at your birth. They're asking you your consent, and you're agreeing to it. I mean, hell, Mike, every time you've answered those questions, yes, Mike ought to know what he is, isn't he? Ignorance of the law is no excuse.
No, and silence is consent, too. They love to play that one. Well, you never said anything.
No objection. But listen, you can call into our show if you're free in that time. And, man, we got uninterrupted. We can go as in-depth as you want to go. We can't do that here.
Yeah, I see that on your webpage. Sovereigntosurf.com.
Yeah, and the book is absolutely phenomenal, but we didn't know a lot of this stuff when the book was written.
Yeah, well, it's a process. Aladask, I used to get... What did he have? Was it the Erwin Rommel School of Law, or am I mixing him up, Aladdin?
Well, yeah, you're mixing him up. I did shows with Al every week for about a year and a half. In fact, it was Al one day on one of those shows that mentioned the presumption of law, and I put that into what I was doing. What hit me about a year ago is taking his man and other animals defense. Do you know about the background on that? Do you know about that, Deanna?
No.
Okay. Aladask, very proficient in the laws in Texas. There's two Texans that have a trust that are making colloidal silver. And the feds want to shut them down bad. So they go after them through the Assistant Attorney General of the state of Texas, who for 5 years personally prosecuted this case. Spent over half $1 million, okay? And at the very last, they bring Al in as the trustee for the trust. Therefore, Al's enjoined in the suit. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Al goes back and starts reading the laws, the original stuff, and he finds in the original food and drug law that they had a commercial and they couldn't write the law anymore.
Wow.
Oh, I mean, that's a joke. We'll cover it when we get back.
We're not coming back. It's,
yeah.
Well, Al reads it. It says man and other animals. He goes into the Assistant Attorney General, says, I'm not an animal. I'm made in God's image. And they fold their tent and walk away.
Wow.
So it doesn't say are subject to the jurisdiction thereof. It says and.
Oh, yes. Roger, thank you so much. Bless your heart. Thank you, thank you, thank you.